So today we're going to be talking about the process of cultivating and sustaining openness. And I think in my description of our gathering today, it was referred to as a radical openness. And often when we explore Buddhist teachings, what you find are methods for sustaining a receptivity, right? For sustaining a curious mind. And so that could be another way of understanding that openness, right? A mind that has a room in it, if you will, has a space in it that can receive whatever's happening. And as we've talked about in all of our gatherings, it seems to be part of the human condition for the mind to get very solid in response to what's happening, right? The mind seems to want to name it, right? Give it a category, and then keep it in that category, right? And then the mind seems to have its own endeavor, right, for sustaining that feeling of control, right? As a clinician, I tend to understand that process as a protective one, right? When we're having experiences, whether they're very exciting and pleasurable or really dreadful and terrifying, right, whatever it is, there's usually some part that simply wants to get a handle on it and feels uncomfortable with our experience being too fluid, right? Too dynamic. But as we've talked about before, the challenge with that response is that in reality, everything we live through is fluid and dynamic. Right? Everything is in a process of flux. It's always changing. Even the experiences that seem so entrenched that they seem to defy change. Right? And maybe you have personal experiences or experiences on a collective level that seem so repetitive. You think, I've tried everything. And this again? Right, I thought that I was determined to change this thing, and then whoop, there it is. Right, so sometimes it can seem that there are parts of our experience that are solid, right, that have a certain permanence to them. But in reality, and I know you all know this, right, this is such an inquisitive, curious group. But sometimes I find it helpful to be reminded that even our seemingly most entrenched experiences are also dynamic, right? Which is because everything we're going through is in a process of transience, of impermanence, all of our conditions, right? All of our conditions. And so often what we find when we're exploring the Dharma or Buddhist teachings are ways to remember that if we can sustain that openness of mind, of heart, right, then actually what we're going to find is that things are in flux. Even the thing that seems to be vexing us most, it's in flux. Right? Even the thing that is driving us nuts, because it's not going away. It's dynamic. It's in flux. Its presence might be more abiding than we would care for, right? Or our experience of whatever it is, right, might be more entrenched than we would care for. But the reality is, everything we go through is changing, is shifting. And often what we find when we meditate is that our perception of reality gets a little bit more fluid, right? There's the sense of things getting a little bit more dynamic, even if it's subtle. And that has something to do with why meditation can feel so good. Right? Often when we're navigating our lives, the mind is trying to get a handle on experience. And so it wants to name, it wants to categorize, it wants to identify very specifically what's happening. But that whole endeavor takes so much work. It can be so exhausting, right? Because of the reality of all phenomena, which is one of flux, right? Transience. And so when we start to feel more aligned with reality, it feels better. It just feels better. Even if what we're contemplating is something that has caused us pain, right? But when we start to allow for how dynamic that painful experience is, we do feel better, right? There's the sense that, maybe there's more to it than I've understood. Maybe the outcome could be different than I've ever imagined or anticipate. Right, there's that sense of spaciousness. Yeah. So in one of our previous meetings, we talked about one of the pithy teachings, which is to regard all phenomena as a dream. Right, regard all phenomena as a dream. And part of what that teaching is getting at is that in the same way when you wake up and you remember either a whole dream or an image or a fragment, usually the response is, that's interesting. I wonder why I was in France and I was on an elephant, or I saw a friend from nursery school, or suddenly I'm in Queens and I'm on the subway trying to get to the dentist. What's that about? There's the sense of being aligned with not knowing, right? And also that those images are dynamic, they're symbolic. They're not one thing. They're not fixed in meaning. But with our waking experience, the tendency is instead to say, no, it's this and only this. Right? The mind gets very, very fixed. Yeah, I do this too all the time. No, it's definitely this. Right? And that's often where the indignation comes in. You're telling me it's not this? You're wrong. I know. You're telling me it could change? No way. You don't know. I know. It's an uncomfortable position to be in, again, because on the deeper layers of our mind, we know that things really are permeable, right? Changeable, dynamic. And when we get very attached to a particular belief, it causes stress, right? It causes an anxiety response because that deeper layer of mind is aware that in reality, there's a much bigger picture. So the pithy teaching that we're going to explore today is to bring meditation to whatever comes. Bring meditation to whatever comes. And let me see if I've got the wording exactly right. Immediately join whatever you meet with meditation. Immediately join whatever you meet with meditation. So part of what that's saying is that in the same way we can be playful with our dreaming mind, we can be playful with our waking experience, right? Meditation, it's essentially a form of play, right? We're working very, very skillfully but very spaciously with the mind so that it can simply hold more, right? And then stay curious, stay non-reactive, right? Keep trying to learn. What's there? Why, if it's a dream, why was I on the Q train and not the L train? And why did I have to catch the Q? That's interesting. Right, that curiosity, right, is what holds the experience. And when we're meditating, we're really cultivating that ability to stay non-reactively curious. But then the challenge, the real challenge, is how to bring that capacity, right, to life. Right? Of course, we need conditions. We need peaceful places like All Souls and all the other beautiful spiritual communities where we can sit in a climate-controlled room. There's not too much distraction. Our cell phones are not going to drive us crazy, right? We have the right conditions to work with the mind. We need that, right? But the whole point of using those conditions is to be able to bring that curious mind to the rest of our lives. Now, often, we're dealing with experiences that feel difficult. Not always, right? I mean, lots of wonderful things happening in our lives. But often there are unforeseen challenges, right? That has something to do with the body. It is so dynamic, right? And it has all sorts of issues that can cause us anxiety and stress and pain. And then our loved ones have bodies, right? And so we're in a system where we're dealing with a lot of unanticipated challenges and difficulties. So with the mind that wants to make things more solid, right, it's a setup to really suffer those experiences, right? To want to get a handle on it rather than to open to it, right? This is what's happening now. I don't really understand it. I have a lot of feelings about it. But I'm going to try to stay curious both about what's happening and my response. And so you see that when you're doing that, you're really bringing that meditative state, right? You're bringing that contemplative, spacious mind to your experience. And even though that process doesn't have the power to eliminate pain, right, it does have the capacity to eliminate a great deal of suffering. Right, and this is a central teaching in the Buddha Dharma that pain is unavoidable, but suffering is optional. I might add to that the degree of suffering is optional, right? I want to suggest that suffering is also part of the human condition, so there's no shame in it, but we can respond to it with incredible compassion, extraordinary intelligence, right? Patience. We can use all the skillful means of the bodhisattva that we've been exploring, so that what we're dealing with starts to feel more manageable, more digestible, right? Something that can be negotiated. So I know we've talked about this before, but it comes up in the Lojong teachings around these phrases, which is the method, right, for sustaining that openness. And it's basically a mindfulness method, right? And you've probably all been thinking about, and some of you are more familiar with the acronym RAIN, right? It's a good way of remembering this particular method, which is first to recognize what's happening. And I would say especially in the mind, right? Of course, you can use this teaching with external circumstance as well, right? Especially if you're dealing with something very complex, it can be very helpful to bring in a mindfulness practice just to recognize, this is happening. But then if you orient toward your mind, it's so helpful. Ah, this response is arising, right? Whether it's terror or frustration or resentment or even maybe some dispassionate intellectual curiosity, right? Whatever it is you notice, just to recognize, ah, that's what's happening. The second part, and this can be a challenging part of this process, is to accept that's what's arising. Now, what I have found, and I've learned this from all of my spiritual and religious mentors, is that most of us who are drawn to spirituality have certain sanctioned feelings and other feelings that we consider to be not so great, not so spiritual. And so it can be easier to accept fear, right, for instance, than, let's say, rage, right, or disgust, right? I mean, we don't like that so much. I know I don't like seeing that in myself, but it just can arise. So with this practice of spaciousness, of mindfulness, the acceptance is simply seeing this is what's arising. Right? But without the value judgment, right? Whether it's compassion or love or concern or frustration, anger, etc. Simply to accept this is what's there in the mind and the heart. And then with that acceptance, what tends to happen is there's a natural curiosity, right, that gets ignited. And that's the investigation. Huh, this is what's there. I recognized it. I'm trying to accept it. And now I'd like to understand a little something about why this is what I'm experiencing in the mind. But like all good anthropologists, right, or good clinicians or good spiritual directors, again, the idea is to investigate with some friendly feeling, but with as little judgment as possible, right? Because there's usually a part of the mind that's extremely quick to recoil if it senses internal judgment. It's very hard to be simultaneously curious and self-critical, right? Which is why shame and reflection are almost mutually exclusive. So then, after a process of investigation, this is, I want to suggest, where some of the real blessings of the Dharma come in. To see what it's like to shift into an experience where it starts to feel less acutely personal. Right? So in the RAIN acronym, the N symbolizes non-identification. Normally, we are so identified with what we're going through because it's happening to us, right? There's this feeling of it's not happening to you, it's happening to me. And therefore, I'm taking this very personally. In fact, I'm feeling that you don't know anything about what I'm feeling because I'm feeling it exclusively. And so sometimes what happens is we can get a little over-attached, right, overly identified with an experience. And so part of what we're going to practice in our meditation today is the process of feeling, right, with some compassion, yes, this is happening to me. And that's my inroad to a much bigger experience. I am going through something that countless other people in some way are probably also going through. The details might be a little different, but I'm going to cultivate more of a feeling of connection, of caring, right, of compassion, because I'm going to stay with my experience, but without owning it so strongly that it prevents me from understanding that actually I got a whole group out there. I got a family of people who know something about what I'm feeling. And I'm going to develop that sense of being surrounded by friends, right? Because we're going through something together. Yeah. What a difference, right? What a difference to have that experience. It's very moving to me, right? That sense of, oh, I'm part of this human family. We all know what it's like to suffer. We all know what it's like to long for well-being and to hope, right? Hope that our conditions are favorable, that help us feel safe and well, help us have a sense of purpose and meaning. And when we really open to how profoundly we are all affected by our experience, it dramatically reduces those feelings of loneliness, of isolation. Right? There's that sense of, we don't have to have spent a lot of time together. We're friends because we're both people. We've both been through a lot. We're both working really hard, right, to try to protect ourselves and others. That's our common ground. Yeah. So that's the radical openness, right? Rather than letting our experience cause that contraction, right, that burrowing in that can also feel very isolating. The work with meditation is to sustain that feeling of openness, right? First for oneself. Yes, this is reality, whether or not I like it or expect it, however I feel about it, this is what's happening. And then to use our experience as an inroad to feel profoundly and genuinely connected to others.